Voices Radio Network.
Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, is Dave Crossland. Dave, what is up, brother? How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good, thanks. It's Veterans Day here in the U.S., and you guys have a similar holiday that just happened over the weekend, right?
Yeah, I don't know if you'd class it as a holiday, but yeah, we have what we call Armistice Day or Remembrance Day, Remembrance Sunday, basically, the Sunday nearest to the 11th of November. We have several minutes silence, and it's very much a military, very much a Armed Forces Day, not particularly Army or Navy or Air Force, but the whole three.
Okay.
As symbolized by the poppy. And it's a day of remembrance. There was some flak this year because it was an ABBA Mr. Universe the same weekend.
Oh.
And USN had a poster on the back of the stage that referenced going to war and battle, and a few people sort of, I don't think they were overly offended by it, but there was definitely some comments about it's a bloody bodybuilding comp, it's not a war or a battle, particularly in lieu of the time of year it was. And there's been a little bit of the few outspoken people that have sort of questioned whether the day should still be remembered, and whether the poppy symbol should be got rid of, and all this sort of thing, which has obviously caused some friction.
Interesting.
I mean, I've always looked at it as it's not a day to commemorate or remember World War One or World War Two, but it's a day to remember all souls lost on all sides in all conflicts.
That makes sense. And that's kind of what we do here. And you know what, too? There's a perfect example. We talked on a previous episode about the word holiday and how we use it. That's what we would consider, that's how we define holiday. It's like it's a day off of work for most people, and the banks and everything are all closed. You know, the post doesn't run, that kind of stuff. So for us, that's considered a holiday, which is, you know, what it really is. So yeah, it's a day of remembrance, and people use it to kind of like party, I think, too, because it's a three-day weekend. So everybody kind of celebrates, and a lot of us are cleaning up our leaves here in Michigan, getting ready for the winter at this point.
I did that this weekend as well. More over here, it's a lot more somber.
Okay. Huh.
So it's a lot of people will attend war memorials.
Okay.
Church services. Ex-armed forces will turn up at church services in full uniform.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Current armed forces will turn up at church services in full uniform. A lot of the local sort of Army cadets or Air Force cadets, or even the Boy Scouts and those sort of organizations, will have marches and parades around the church or to the church and be involved in the service. And the sale of the poppy goes on for a couple of weeks beforehand, and that raises funds to support ex-soldiers and ex-air forcemen that have, you know, either been injured or lost their lives, or family that have been devastated by. So it's all military-related funding.
Okay.
That the sales of that goes. A lot go through the British Legion, which supports ex-soldiers. And it's just a day to reflect, I suppose, really. I saw, unfortunately, it's a day that brings out, I don't know if you would have the same term over there, but we call them Walter Mitties.
What is it?
Walter Mitties.
Walter Mitties.
They are people that pretend to have a service history.
Oh, really?
So they'll turn up in uniform with their medals that they've bought online.
You're kidding.
Having never served, and pretend to be ex-servicemen. Yeah.
You are kidding me.
Oh, no, there's a couple of, there's actually a couple of organizations dedicated to exposing these people.
What the hell?
People like to ride on the coattails of others, don't they? You know, I'm not so sure that service personnel get the respect so much now as they used to, but definitely World War One, World War Two veterans do.
Okay.
Not that there's that many left anymore, to be fair. Definitely World War One, I don't think there's many left at all.
Sure.
I don't think there's about one or two. I did see a video of an old guy in a wheelchair who was held to his feet. He was an ex-para, you could tell by his beret. And he was held to his feet by two current paras.
Really?
So he could salute, which was touching.
Hmm.
You get a lot of that. It was 100 years as well, so obviously that played a big role from the end of World War One this year.
Hmm.
So things were ramped up a little bit. But there's always tension and politics around these things. And you know what? The thing is, 99% of people that fight in wars don't go to war for politics. They don't go to war for power. They don't go to war for religion purpose. They go to war because they think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Or in some cases, because they have no choice.
Yeah, that's true too.
And you know, these people died without probably any understanding of the deeper politics behind these sort of things. And because they believed they were doing the right thing on both sides.
Right.
You know, I don't think anyone goes to war and volunteers to fight for the country because they think it's a crock of shit.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? They go because they think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And you know, fucking hell, God, billions have lost their lives over the centuries. And families and children and you know, bombing campaigns that have injured others and everything else. So I just feel it's a time where you just take a little bit of time to just remember those, irrespective of where your standpoint is politically or religiously or emotionally in any of this. You know, end of day, people lost their lives doing what they thought was the right thing.
I think that's a good way of looking at it, and I feel like everybody could get behind that. You know, on a brighter note, I'll say a more lighthearted note. You got to hang out with the BBC this weekend as well. Am I right?
I did. Yes, they took me out for lunch on Friday.
No kidding. No kidding. Let me ask you this first. What'd you have to eat? What did the BBC buy you?
Steak.
Nice, nice. You went big. You figure like if you're going out,
I nearly took to the most expensive restaurant in Huddersfield, but I thought that was taking a piss a little bit.
Man, so what was that all about?
They contacted me. They're doing a documentary now. To be fair, the producer and the presenter of the show came up. I can't remember the name, so forgive me for that. And the girl that's presenting is actually, she talked through me about some of the previous work she'd done. And she proper gets stuck in. And so she'd done a piece on moped gangs that were going around and robbing people.
Really?
And she went out with a gang on the back of a moped when they went out on robbing sprees.
This is still going on, these moped gangs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I've seen that in the movies from like the 60s. I didn't realize that still happened.
We have a very strange law over here. The police are not allowed to pursue somebody on a moped.
What? What?
No. So they can follow them at a distance, but they're not allowed to actively pursue somebody on a moped.
What's the reasoning behind that?
I have no friggin' idea.
It's so weird.
I presume it's born out of some sort of safety aspect from injury or such like, but because the vast majority of police are cars, not bike.
Right, right.
But yeah, I mean, I have a friend who's a local police officer who does actually ride the bikes, and he told me a couple of times where he's literally just followed a guy around for 2-3 hours on a moped.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. It seems mad. Absolutely mad. As soon as he gets off the moped, apparently he's fair game. But while he's on the moped, they're not allowed to touch him.
That is, I've heard we have some weird laws here. That one, I think, takes the cake, though. That's funny.
Someone no doubt will be listening to this that is probably in law enforcement in the UK, and they may be able to shed a bit more light on the exact of it. But that's the general gist from what I've been told.
Yeah.
But yeah, she went out and she was on the back of the moped while these gangs were going out and robbing. Wow. So she gets proper, you know, in. She went out to, I can't remember the country, but there was a country where the leader declared war on all drug dealers and it became legal to shoot drug dealers.
Okay.
So everyone just started walking around shooting drug dealers.
Wow. I guess that would get crime under control pretty quick.
3,000 people got shot.
Wow.
But apparently it got a bit peaked on because it was very much like the Salem witch trials.
Okay.
Didn't like your frigging neighbor. He's a drug dealer. Bang.
Wow.
So she went out and got heavily involved in that. So anyway, they're doing this documentary on counterfeiting.
Okay.
And I was like, well, what do you want to speak to me, Thorne? Because we can also look at steroids.
Oh.
All right. And I said, what? The pharma counterfeit? She goes, well, that, yes, but the UGL in general, because you could argue to some degree that the generic, which is the UGL trade, is in a way a counterfeit.
Hmm.
Because it's not a genuine medicinal product, and it's sort of pretending to be one sort of thing. I said, well, I think you're pushing your luck in saying that, but I get where you're coming from.
Yeah.
So, as always, they wanted to get into a lab. They wanted to film in a lab. They wanted to interview a lab owner. So I put my straws out, but I don't think anyone's going to come back and do it.
Right.
They might do if someone's hoping for the glory. But the danger there is you'll get some idiot that just talks a lot of bollocks because they're just idiots.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, the first person to stand up and say, oh, I'm a chemist, is probably not the biggest chemist in the world, and they're looking more for attention than anything else, right?
Yeah. I've seen a couple of pieces in past that are supposed to be being in labs. And when you looked at the equipment, it's like, oh, what the hell's that doing there? Why is that? That's not necessary. What the fuck's that there?
Yeah.
And it was obvious that they'd looked at the basic lab and thought, well, that doesn't look laboratory enough. Let's stick some more equipment in.
Right, right.
So anyway, we'll see. She's actually rung me today to see if I've got anywhere with any feedback on anything. And I said, no, not today. I don't think anything will come of it. But, you know, sometimes you get surprised.
Yeah. Okay, so when you mentioned this initially, I assumed they were going to talk about the actual counterfeits, because I know that at least a decade ago, I don't know how it is now, but at least a decade ago, it was real popular to have fake products that looked like they were supposed to be, say, like Norma Deca or, you know, Iranian sustenance, but they were actually manufactured in a UGL lab, and there were only a few people that could actually tell the difference. It would be something in the way the font looked on a letter or the spacing on particular words.
Still goes on. I mean, I think that's one of the things why the UGL market's been driven so strong in the UK, because people got sick of buying what they thought was pharma and finding out it wasn't.
Yeah.
And they'd rather go with a UGL. But then the UGL gets counterfeits.
Hmm.
You know, there are UGLs copying or counterfeiting other UGLs.
I've seen that.
The UGL has a good brand.
Hmm.
So there is. But, yeah, the pharma counterfeit still goes on. I do a bit of work with Lily over here, and their investigator has said to me that he's yet to pull off the back market a genuine pharma Lily human growth hormone vaccine.
You're kidding me.
And he says, don't get me wrong. He says some of them do contain growth hormone and everything else, but he said they're not ours.
Wow.
And it was so, I mean, I think one of the questions was, is the bodybuilding market that big that's created this counterfeit market for prescription drugs? And I was like, nah, not really. I said, the difference is that these drugs are going into controlled and bonded warehousing for supply to pharma distribution and then obviously into the medical network of hospitals and chemists and everything else. That's their main target.
Hmm.
But once they get into that area, the problem is then that they're very tightly regulated.
Hmm.
So what happens is quite often the pallet will get diverted before it hits there, and that's what floods into the black market for the bodybuilding market.
Okay.
But the main target is the chemists and the hospitals. And we've had a few hospitals in the UK being stung with counterfeit drugs.
Really?
It doesn't make headline news, but yeah, it goes on. Definitely goes on. It's big money. I mean, the problem is with like a growth hormone pen, for argument's sake. I can buy growth hormone black market cheaper than I can buy a prescription.
Absolutely.
And when you're talking the markup on these pens and the volume at which a medical trust will buy them in at,
yeah,
it's a viable proposition when you're going to make hundreds of thousands of pounds on a couple of orders.
Yeah.
But that market isn't there in single orders for the bodybuilding community.
No.
You're only going to be making a few hundred pounds or a few thousand pounds, maybe tens of thousands. You're not going to be making hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
So the big driving factor is the pharmaceutical trade. That's what they're trying to rip off.
I didn't, I never noticed that. I never thought about that. That makes total sense, though.
But, I mean, guys still buy from Turkey and Bulgaria and Romania and stuff like that. And even there, it's hit and miss. 9 times out of 10, it does actually have the ingredients it's supposed to have in it.
Mm, okay.
It's just not always made by the company it's supposed to be made by.
And then people are paying that top dollar because they believe they're getting a pharma product versus a UGL price, right?
Yeah. And I think part of the unknown element of whether that pharma product was good or not, plus the supply chains being harder to exploit now, is why the vast majority of users in the UK now run UGL and rely on the UGL reputations of what's good and not good.
Hmm. Yeah, I remember one brand in particular that was real popular more than a decade ago was British Dragon. And then British Dragon started getting fakes. That was popular in the UK, I believe. And then they started producing fakes at that. And now there's another company that's no longer tied to the original British Dragon, but British Dragon is still being produced.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, you know, one of them got bust recently and I'm trying to think which one it was. Oh, no, it wasn't. It was Wildcat got bust, not British Dragon. Sorry. Okay. Wildcat's been around for a very long time as well.
Hmm. I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah, well, they're 10, 15 year plus. And a guy called Chris Young got busted. He was the guy behind that.
Oh, wow. Was he from the UK?
Yeah. He's all done and sentenced now, so I can talk about his case.
I
can't talk about quantity because his process of crime order is still ongoing, but his actual sentencing and his prison sentence has all been delivered. So they could, but he had a shipping container, was his lab.
Oh, wow. Now, do they go pretty hard on that type of thing there?
They're starting to go harder. And the big driving factor around sentencing is actual value of the product.
Okay.
So instead of looking at the drug operation, they're looking at the income from a drug operation and then comparing that to, you know, it doesn't matter if the income is from Class A, Class B or Class C, if the income is £1 million a year, then you're going to get a sentence that reflects you were earning £1 million a year.
Oh, wow.
So sentences are starting to creep up. I think Chris got 7 years, but don't quote me on that.
Okay.
I'd have to double check. But yeah, they're starting to creep up now. They are.
Wow.
But that were a big operation. I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of tablets of each particular type were seized in that operation.
Oh, wow.
And then there was another lab called D-Hacks that got bust, and they were using a cement mixer to mix their powders because that's the volume of powder they were mixing.
Wow.
So there's some big labs operating now. But, yeah, so they've done clothing and bags and all that sort of thing, and they wanted to touch on steroids as well. I think it'll only occupy about 10 minutes in a 60-minute documentary.
But, okay.
They're keen to move forward with it.
Now, while they talked to you, did they have the cameras running or anything, or this was just for research?
No, it was just an informal chat, but they may... They have said, would I be willing to appear on camera to discuss or sort of run a commentary with them about what they're seeing and what they're getting? And I said, yeah, of course I would have no problem with that at all.
Okay. Have you done stuff with the BBC before? I believe you have, haven't you?
I've done stuff with the BBC. I've done stuff with ITV. I've done stuff with The Guardian newspaper, Sky, quite a few news outlets, yes.
That's cool, man. I'm glad to hear
successfully. I might add.
Well, I'm glad to hear that they're turning to you, like much like you were saying about somebody who's, you know, running a lab. The oftentimes the first person to stand up who's willing to talk is kind of the last person that you'd really want to represent. But I feel like you're a guy who knows what you're talking about, and you're not gonna Walter Mitty him. Is that the term?
the hard work. They are hard work. You've got to be very careful with them.
What do you mean?
They cannot edit what you say to change what you say.
Really?
They're not allowed to by law, so you can screw the ass off them for that.
Huh.
But what they can do is edit to create emphasis on certain things.
Okay.
So you've got to be very careful when you speak to them of how you communicate and what you put across so that they can't try and lead it one way or another.
Oh.
And I've had a couple of run-ins in the past with them.
Really?
I did 3 days filming with The Guardian for a Guardian Online piece, and it was going to be a brilliant piece. The two guys that came out were real open-minded and very willing to just show what they found out. They had no preconceived conceptions of anything whatsoever, and they were genuinely interested in finding out what was going on in the world and how it was, and was it this big evil and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
They finished the piece and it went to their editing chief, and he refused to air the piece because he said it came across as supporting use.
Hmm.
So they were forced to include a section by a doctor that was talking absolutely out of his arse.
Really?
Oh, complete sensationalistic bullshit. And he actually rang me up to the guy that had done the piece and said, I'm really sorry, I've had to stick this guy in. Because it's the only way they'll let us air it.
Wow.
So, you know, people say, oh, they've got an agenda. And I wouldn't say they've got an agenda as such, but they are very, very conscious about putting a piece out that may appear to be pro.
Okay.
And they would rather appear to be anti-slightly than they would in any way like to appear neutral or pro.
Sure. I could see that.
So, yeah, they can be tricky buggers to work with.
Hey, you know, something we didn't get a chance to talk about last week. You had gotten back from your holiday. You had that the golden, I'll call it the golden red tan. And you mentioned to me a bunch of people had commented about how, hey, Dave, you look so healthy. You're looking so good. And something that kind of came from that is that, you know, the ideas of how we look on the outside versus how our health is doing on the inside. I thought that was a really interesting topic. We didn't get a chance to broach that last week, but let's kind of shift gears before we go to our break and answer questions. Let's talk a little bit about that because you are looking healthy. I've seen some of your videos and stuff, and you've got a good glow going on. Yeah, but at the same time, you said your kidneys aren't doing as good as they had been in the past, right?
My health, my physical health is probably the worst it's ever been in my life.
Really?
Hmm.
I mean, I say really like I'm surprised. We did talk about this before, but I wouldn't have thought that you're off, you know, the gear now. You're not pushing things like you were.
But the damage is there. The damage has already been done.
Mm.
So, you know, my cardiovascular ability is the worst it's ever been. And that's down to my heart struggling at the moment. It's improving. It is improving. And I'm doing my little bit every day that I'm supposed to do and gradually building up, and it is getting better.
Okay.
But I have more health complaints or health conditions that are serious at this current time than I've ever had. And I found it quite ironic that appearance counts for so much in how we judge people, in how we perceive people and how we perceive their relative healthiness. And quite often it can be a massive misleader.
Hey, even in how we perceive ourselves, you know,
yeah.
I don't need to get blood work done. I look great. I feel great, right?
Yeah, there's that element too. And then the other element is that we start trying to make excuses for wrong things.
Mm.
You know, we'll avoid discovering the truth because we don't want to face the fact that our decisions may have been less than positive for ourselves. But there's several people that are looked up to in the UK. I mean, I can't comment on American athletes because I don't really know them, that are very much looked up to in the UK that his health is not good. Or has some very distinctive problems. But because they don't show this and they look all right on the outside, everybody thinks they're doing really, really well. And it just, yeah, I just found it quite, I suppose it's a bit of a human condition, isn't it? How we judge things with our eyes. We judge things how we see them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, most guys stepping on stage, to be fair, actually look really good. You know, they're lean, they're brown, they've got a healthy glow. That might be high BP, but they've still got a healthy glow. And most of them feel like absolute dog shit. But yeah, it made me chuckle, especially because I still get old comments pop up on my notifications of old videos where I look like an absolute walking dead zombie.
You looked pretty rough at a couple points there, man. I won't lie.
I look back now and I'm just thinking, Jesus Christ, I didn't realize I actually looked that bad.
Oh, man.
And yeah, I'm in better health on them than I am now. And I just find it quite amusing.
Yeah.
The one where I look like I've got a face made out of hamburger is the one that particularly attracts a lot of attention.
I think I remember that. What was going on with that? Was it acne?
Yeah, it was a rosacea brought on by central nervous system stress and fatigue, basically.
Okay.
So it's a stress trigger. So it wasn't acne from a point of view of overproduction of oil or anything like that. It was to do with my central nervous system.
Okay.
But it was to do with the gear. It just wasn't in the normal avenue of oil production or hormone imbalance. It was to do with the toxicities and just my whole central nervous system being run down.
Okay.
But yeah, I came out where they weren't even like spots. They were like huge, not even boils, but just like razors of skin.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a rough, period, I'm sure.
That was a rough look. I don't know about anything else. There were no amount of makeup carrying that one off.
Well, here's the thing though, I think is important, man. You know, you always have, your stance has always been to be honest. And I think it would be real easy for you to just kind of go with it. People say, hey, you look great, Dave. You're looking healthy. It'd be easy for you to just kind of ride that high and just agree with everybody. Hey, yeah, I am. I'm doing great. Thanks. You know, that would be the easy way to go.
You know what? I actually feel pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm sleeping a lot better. I've started taking a neural support supplement.
Really?
It's actually a cortisol suppressant supplement. It's from this Richard Foster at Strong Nutrition, who I did the cycle support product with.
Okay.
And he's brought one out for neural. Now, I've always had a very bad monkey brain. So it doesn't shut off and it bounces. When I go to bed, it bounces all over the walls as my brain.
Okay.
One thing to another, to another, to another, to another, to another. And I just end up getting lost as to where I even am with things.
Yeah.
It literally is that bad that I can't count to 10 because when I get to about 5 or 6, I'll be thinking about something else.
Oh, geez. I've been there.
So I start taking this stuff and it's allowed my brain to just sort of focus a bit better on one thing, which in turn has meant when I go to sleep, my brain's not bouncing all over the place going through a million and one things that I've touched on that day. My brain itself is so much more organized in how it's approaching things. So therefore I'm sleeping a lot better. And in general, I feel pretty good until you put me on a treadmill. And then I'm useless.
What do you mean?
I've got no cardiovascular ability because my heart can't cope with it at the moment.
Okay.
So I can still train anaerobically quite decently, but I can't do that middle ground. So I can do very low level impact cardiovascular work. So I could go for a walk and walk a few miles and I'd be okay with that. But when it starts getting into that sort of working area, you know, when BP is around the 160 mark, what will happen with mine is I'll sit quite comfortable and I'll be sitting around 150 BP, 155, 155, 156. 3 steps later, 185.
Wow.
And it stays then. And then I can't breathe.
I bet.
And then it'll go 185, 188, 190, 195, and it'll stay way up there.
Whew.
And it will not come back down. So what I've been doing is, and I've chose the stepper for this, so Stairmaster. It seems to be giving me the best balance of intensity. And I've just been slowly building on that every day. So I do a little bit every day, and I'm only adding 10, 15 seconds every time, sometimes not even that. But it's slowly getting better. But that's the problem I have at the moment. So wandering around every day stuff, perfectly fine. Can work long hours, perfectly fine, don't feel tired, feel good. can train relatively intensely, though obviously I'm not using anywhere near the weights I used to. But that higher end cardiovascular where you start to do a little bit of work, I'm absolutely useless at. So that's where I've been working on trying to improve. So that's it. The kidneys are stable, but they are still 24%, and they're not improving, but they are stable at least.
Is there anything that can be done for that with your kidneys to get that to improve?
As the weight, well, yes. I'm going to say this wrong.
Okay.
Glutathione.
Okay.
I think I said that right.
I think that was pretty close, yeah.
Yeah. Shit at pronouncing things.
That makes two of us.
So, been looking at that. Main sort of popular version of it at the moment is liposomal.
Okay.
Which is, unfortunately, stinks because it's a sulfur base.
Mm.
But just looking into possibly running a trial with glutathione sometime in the near future and see if that will improve it.
Now, I see that here in a lot of the rejuvenation doctors are promoting that stuff. It's available as an injection. I've also seen it as an oral. Was there one of the two directions that you were looking at going with it?
Yeah, I'm just looking at it as potentially trying it for a trial. It's supposed to be the mother of all antioxidants and particularly good at helping with kidneys. So I'm just going to give it a blast and see if it had any impact.
Okay, or would that be oral or an injection?
Not decided yet.
Okay, I see. That's what I was wondering.
The bioavailability of oral is difficult, which is why you generally get the liposomal version.
Okay.
The liposomal version tastes like shit and stinks fucking awful.
Mm.
So we will see. But I'm going to probably give that a shot and see if that has any impact. Otherwise, there isn't really, apart from losing more weight, which I'm still ongoing with, isn't really a great deal, apart from just living a healthy lifestyle.
Okay.
So, and that's where I'm at with things now. It's more a case of, you know, athletic functional fitness rather than all-out power or size.
Yeah. Wow, 24%. So do the doctors say you could still live a long, happy life with 24%? I don't really know. It doesn't sound great to me, you know, to be honest.
You start looking at dialysis when you start getting 10% and less.
Okay. So as long as you're healthy from here.
The way they work it over here is that once you hit dialysis, then you'll get put on the list for transplant.
Okay.
But they won't transplant unless you're under I literally think it's about 105 kilo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they want you light. But it is down to the individual surgeons.
Okay.
To make the final decision.
Okay.
But, I'm stable and have been stable for a while, so it's just a case of not doing anything stupid that's going to disrupt that.
Awesome. That's great to hear, man.
Well, you roll the dice, you pay the price.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a good lesson, I think, for everybody here. It's hard to hear, man. I consider you my friend now, and I just think I want to be able to keep doing the show with you for a long time. I want to be able to keep here. What's Dave Crossland up to? I want to be asking that question in 5 years, you know what I mean? 10 years.
Well, he's got, you know, I've no regrets. I genuinely have no regrets.
Yeah.
I was well aware of potential problems. Yeah, I blindsided myself a little bit, and there was that element of denial going on at stages and just trying to ignore problems or come up with overcomplicated solutions to problems. Instead of just looking at the basic, obvious cause behind these things at certain points. But the bottom line is, you know, I took a risk and this is the result of that risk. I have no regrets. I blame nobody but myself. And there's no need for anyone to feel sorry for me. I mean, I'm not a victim in this. It's my own creation.
Yeah.
And I personally don't think I deserve it at the end of the day. I've tried to make them positive events and I've tried to learn from them and then impart that knowledge on other people.
Yeah.
But it's not like I'm a victim of a car crash because a drunk person drove down the road and took my legs off or anything like that. You know, I've done this to myself.
Yeah. Well, that's I guess the most important thing, man, is to I'm glad we can share that message, you know, because I think it would be easy to just walk around and be like, hey, I look great. I got a good tan. Everybody in the gym tells me that I'm doing awesome. You know, let's remember and think about that. You know, let's think about, you know, what could really be going on.
Yeah, it's part of the lifestyle. I think we have a certain look that we aim to achieve, and that obviously hides a lot of potential problems that could be going on. And at the moment, we're just talking about physical issues. We're not even touched on potential mental issues, which is a different, very deep and heavy bag of fish. That
did you say heavy bag of fish? I like that one.
And that's a point. Yeah, word of the day.
Oh yeah, we don't have a word of the day. You ran a couple by me. What was this word? This phrase? I've never heard this before. Shit monkey.
Right.
Well, what is this?
I wouldn't say that's particularly an English phrase, but there's a history behind shit monkey, and I think shit monkey is a great insult.
I've never heard that one.
I started getting messages of an individual who, according to his Facebook profile, was, I believe, Swiss.
Okay.
And worked for a chain of supermarkets in Switzerland. And they were quite abusive. And one of the insults that this guy kept going back to was that I was a shit monkey. Now, I know you shouldn't feed trolls, but I don't know if I was just bored or whatever, but I decided I'd engage with this guy a little bit. And I started posting the interactions we had on a page on Facebook.
Yeah.
And this went on for weeks, this thing. So this wasn't just a quick flash thing. And he was quite nasty. And, you know, I was this, I was that, I was the other. And he was going to destroy me. He was going to do this. And then he started saying he was going to kill me.
Whoa.
And I was like, okay, fair enough. No problem. And this fair went enough. On. And I'm like, okay, so how are you going to do this? He says, I'm going to come over there. I'm going to kill you. I said, well, and I started saying stuff like, well, that's a bit unfair, really, mate. I mean, you live in Switzerland. That's a long way to come. Do you want to meet halfway? You know, it's going to be quite expensive to come all this way just to kill me. I mean,
yeah,
we could eat in Amsterdam or something, a halfway point. Start messing around with stuff like this. I'm probably a bit irresponsible on my part. But
you think?
And he kept going on and on and on. And he was going to shoot me. And I said, well, look, you're going to struggle getting a gun through customs. So if you let me know when you're coming, I'll make a few phone calls and see if I can sort one out for you. You can pick up when you get here.
Yeah.
And then he gave me a specific day.
What?
He gave me a specific day. He gave me this date. I think it was in June. He says, I think it might have been June the 16th or something like that. And I'm going to do this. I'm going to. And I'm like, well, that doesn't really work for me. Can we change it? And we kept going on this. I'm going to do this at this time. I'm going to kill you. And I thought, well, I'm really glad you let me know because it gives me a chance to get everything sorted.
Right, right.
I said, the only problem is with that, I said, I'm not at home on that day. I'm in Kent at a police conference. I said, so you're more than welcome to come and try.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's going to go down too well when I'm surrounded by a lot of coppers in a police station.
Hey, he would need to be on a moped.
And he was quiet for a few days, and then I just got this message back saying, sorry, man, just joking, and that was the end of it.
Wow.
But shit monkey stopped, and ever since, I've wanted to bring out a line of T-shirts with shit monkey on it. And I've got this, you know the Family Guy?
Oh, of course.
You know the angry monkey that lives in the closet?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's like from hell.
Of something similar to that on a T-shirt with shit monkey underneath it.
It'd kind of be like Jay Cutler's swole monkey, but shit monkey.
Yeah, just the shit monkey brand of clothing. Yeah, when life gets you down, throw poo, shit monkey.
I like it.
So yeah, I want to bring out a brand of shit monkey clothing now.
Man, I don't know. I'm gonna try. I'll try to. If I can work that in today, I will. But that's a tough one. That's not like holiday. Holiday was one I could easily do. It's
better than cock womble, which was the other one we were going to use.
Oh, man. All right. Well, hey, let's. What do you say we get to a commercial break and come back and tackle some questions?
No problem.
All right, guys, we'll be back in just a minute.
Hey, what's up, guys? I wanted to take this break and give some credit where credit is due.
He didn't ask me to do this commercial, but I am doing it. And that's because I'm grateful. So thank you, Dave Crossland. Thank you for your contribution here at Advices Radio, and thank you for your contribution to bodybuilding as a whole. Guys, you can check out more of Dave over at his website. It's crosslands.org.uk. That's crosslands.org.uk. Crosslands Harm Reduction Service specializes in providing concise, informative, and effective drug training to a wide range of professionals, as well as advising individual users. And be sure to check out his YouTube page. It's at UC The Freak. That's the letter U, the letter C, The Freak. So you can't miss him there. The guy's all over YouTube. All right, guys, we will get back to the program in just a moment. Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
All right, guys, and we are back. Dave Crossland with Drugs and Stuff. I'm Scott McNally. We've got a bunch of questions here. We're gonna do a cleanup. We've got some questions that we've missed through the threads over the weeks, and we have a bunch of questions over at the forum. Guys, if you want to ask questions, we will occasionally post out threads. Dave and I both will. You can ask questions when we release the shows in those posts on social media through either Dave's page or mine. And also you can go to the Advices Radio forum. That's forum.advicesradio.com. There is a bodybuilding section. And in that bodybuilding section, there's a sticky for Drugs and Stuff. And that's where we are going right now. All right. So the first question we have here is, what would you recommend for the first time running growth? I believe on Blood, Sweat, and Gear, it was recently brought up that someone ran growth Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I like the idea of running it alone to see how I react. What are the key factors to watch for, and does it have a major effect on estrogen? The most gear I've ever run is 500 milligrams of Test Sip, with 200 milligrams of Tren Ace per week and 25 milligrams of Anavar per day. So what do you think about running growth on its own, first of all, Dave, to see how you react to it?
Well, I mean, I think my opinion on growth and insulin, both of those drugs, is probably a very unpopular one. Mm. But the only benefit I see to running growth is well-being, improved sleep, improved recovery. And for that instance, then dosing would be quite low. And I am a fan of the Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or every other day. The only step further from that I would potentially go would be very low dose, intermittent throughout the day. And when I mean very low dose, I'm talking about 3/4 of an IU to 1 IU.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. You see, the main turnover from growth, growth isn't going to make you massive as far as I'm concerned. And I fully do not believe that growth hormone makes you big. But it does improve your recovery. It does improve your sleep. And it does improve, you know, cellular regeneration. So downsides are when you start going high dose are insulin resistance, which is going to mean that you're going to start having problems with nutritional partitioning and nutritional transit.
Mm.
Water retention. If water retention is very high, then that can have an impact on cardiovascular health, depending on how fit and healthy and how big you are in the first instance. Could it be run as a standalone? Yes. But again, what you're going to see off that is an improved condition, an improved well-being. You're not going to see mass.
Hmm.
You'll see some fullness as you get an increase in water retention within the muscle. You'll see improved sleep, improved recovery, and just a general sense of improved well-being. So I don't see any place in growth more than for those purposes.
Yeah. So his previous cycle, he said the most he's ever run is 500 tests with 200 tren and 25 Anavar. That's going to be a lot better, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to definitely put more muscle mass on him. And that those doses seem quite sensible as well. I mean, obviously, I don't know anything about his history or his current size or his experience with drugs, but he seems to have quite a conservative approach and seems to be quite sensible in his dosing up to this point. Growth hormone on its own, I don't see him losing any muscle mass off running the growth.
Sure.
He'll look a bit fuller, he should get a bit leaner, and he should generally feel pretty good. If he starts pushing the doses high, that's when he'll start seeing side effects. And that's person dependent. Some people start seeing water retention at 4 IU, some at 6, some can handle a bit more. And whether you get carpal tunnel type syndrome, where you start getting swelling in the joints from the water retention and painful hands and such like, is again individually based. For most people, especially if they're quite new to the drug, a PM dosing is probably the easiest way to start to play with it. For those that are a bit more experienced, they could probably look at doing the interdisperse throughout the day, but I wouldn't recommend these 2 and 3 IU in the morning dosing, because you're going to find you're going to start to feel fatigued during the day.
So if you're getting fatigue, take it at night is what you're saying.
Yeah, you know, you've end of day, for the vast majority of us, this is not a career. This is not how we make our money. We have relationships. We have jobs to hold down. If you're taking growth hormone in the morning and by 11, 12 o'clock, you're absolutely knackered and wanting to curl in the corner and go to sleep,
yeah,
that's not conducive to what you do, is it? That's not going to mean you're going to be, and for some people, it could potentially be dangerous if you've got a job where you've got to have your wits about you.
Yeah.
So I don't rate growth for big muscle mass. I really don't.
Yeah.
And I've yet to see any scientific evidence that supports that it causes huge muscle growth.
You've really knocked that point home for me, and I'm 100% in agreement. I haven't seen the difference in size gains. And I agree with you, like I feel like I can definitely eat more and still stay leaner, but in itself, it hadn't really been worth it as far as an actual size builder goes.
Yeah, I mean, there's secondary effects like that that can be very, very useful, particularly if you're struggling with your food. But then again, you would only be needing to look at it then when you got to the point where you couldn't eat anymore.
Yeah.
And for most people, that's quite a way down the line. So, yeah, it's just something I'm not a big, and it's an expensive drug. And I think people go to it far too early and spend far too much money on it, thinking it's going to, you know, change the world. Yeah. And in the vast majority, it doesn't.
Yeah. All right. We've got a post-cycle therapy question here. Why is it that some top-level prep guys recommend post-cycle therapy and others say that you don't need it? I've worked with someone before, and basically they have me stay on cycle and estrogen control with an AI using aromasin. It seems it worked, but I have tanked my estrogen before. Basically, as long as the labs were good, he said I was fine to stay on cycle. Normally, my red blood count, hematocrit, and hemoglobin are the reasons for coming off cycle. Sometimes my T4 and BUN creatine ratio come back low as well. It is also not better on the liver is it not also better on the liver to take, say, Nolvadex and block receptors compared to just using an AI to bring it down?
Right. Fucking hell. No, there's just quite a few bits in there.
Yeah, yeah.
PCT versus Cruise. The simple fact of it is this. The longer you are on, at whatever dose, particularly if you've done a cycle, then dropped into a cruise, you are in a state of shutdown. Your body is not going to start to recover on a cruise. Once you are shut down, and that is it. The longer you are shut down, the more likely you are to put yourself in a position where you cannot recover.
Yeah.
So the first thing you need to decide is it a concern for you as an individual that you may be drug dependent for the rest of your life? For some people it isn't, for some people it is. Outside of the bodybuilding community, it's regarded as quite a severe medical condition. Within the bodybuilding and user community, it's generally regarded as not being. Is TRT safe? So is genuine TRT safe? At this point, I would say it's 50-50. There is evidence saying it's healthy. There is evidence saying it's not. What a lot of the evidence says that says it's healthy is when in compared with low testosterone. And yes, I have to agree that from comparison of running your test levels at 5 to 7 or even lower, that is severely unhealthy and much, much healthier to run TRT. But there is a lot of concern that long-term TRT patients, and bear in mind we're getting to the point where the very early TRT patients are now looking at being on for 30, 40 years, are showing higher levels of cardiac episode. So there is some concern that there are links to increased cardiac episode through TRT, but none of this is conclusive. So at the moment, I would say personally that I would always look to PCT where it was viable and possible. But there's no point in PCTing if you're just going to jump back on cycle strike after. You need, if you're going to go on PCT, you need time off post PCT. At this point, post PCT, your whole HPTA access is very vulnerable and very sensitive. And if you jump straight back on cycle, definitely cruising would have been the healthier alternative to rather than doing PCT and then jumping straight back on.
That makes sense.
Now, AIs and Novadex. Novadex is a SERM, it's a selective estrogen receptor modulator. So what this does is it acts as an antagonist and an agonist at certain receptor sites. Therefore, it allows estrogen action within the liver, which helps keep a healthy lipid profile, so healthy cholesterol. But it blocks estrogen receptors at the hypothalamus, at the pituitary, at the nipple, and at various few other places. It isn't used in PCT for estrogen control. It's used in PCT because it drops the feed, it blocks the feedback mechanisms. So if your hypothalamus or your pituitary sense an elevation in hormone, they will reduce, respectively, GnRH output, which is gonadotropin-releasing hormone, which comes out of the hypothalamus, or FSH and LH from the pituitary. Novadex blocks the receptors, which means your body thinks your hormone levels are low, so it pumps out more GnRH from the hypothalamus, and then, as a result of that, more FSH and LH from the pituitary, which helps restore testicular function. So that's why Novadex is used in PCT. It's not used in PCT to control estrogen levels.
Okay.
In fact, if you're wanting to use a really strong PCT because you've been on very suppressive drugs and you've been on suppressive drugs for a very long time, there is reason to add in a low amount of aromasin in a PCT. However, only aromasin or another suicide inhibitor. Do not use Letro, do not use Adex, because they bind. They don't bind with aromatase and make it inert. They stop the production of aromatase, which then causes an estrogen bloom post-usage. Because you're very sensitive post-PCT, when you remove ADEX post-PCT, you run the risk of an estrogen balloon, which will then start to suppress your natural hormone production, because high estrogen, high testosterone, or high progesterone will all cause shutdown.
Okay, so Remedex, Letro, you're saying that's bad news going into post-cycle. You don't want to run that in post-cycle therapy.
No, but aromasin is viable because there's no rebound, and Novadex is used to block receptors to cause an increase in signaling output. It's not about estrogen control. So my old attitude is wherever I could, and for as long as I could, I PCT'd, and then when it became apparent that recovery was becoming difficult, I then opted to cruise.
Okay. You know, he had a piece at the end here. I didn't notice this at first. He says, just to give you some added info, he says he's 36. He's been working on and off, working out on and off for 20 years, and his test levels are in the 290s.
Well, then there doesn't seem much point in him PCT. And if he has tried to PCT and it's resulted in those test levels, then the chances are he's not responding. And it's just the result of, it's just the fact is that he's not recovering. And this is the thing. When you PCT, ideally, in an ideal situation, what you would do is you get blood done and a hormone palate done before you ever used.
Yeah.
That's your then baseline. Then when you PCT, 3-4 weeks post-PCT, you do your bloods and you'd see if they're recovered close to baseline. You'd look at age diagnosis as well. We decline levels at about 1% per annum. That's our natural decline in hormone levels. It's about 1% per annum.
Okay.
So what you do is then you look at, and if you found that, say your pre-cycle test was 29, and I'm talking NMOL now, so I couldn't tell you what that was in NGDL, to be honest, but probably looking around the 1,000 mark, 900s, 800, 900, somewhere up that end. And then you did your PCT and it came back and it reduced by 15%. Then the chances are you haven't fully recovered. So your option then is to either run a secondary lower level PCT or just run something like Novadex to try and bring it up a bit higher, or just stay off a bit longer until it comes back up itself. And then you'd run your next cycle and obviously repeat the process every time. What people do is they PCT and they feel all right, so they assume they've recovered. But you won't be able to tell the difference between a test level of 16 in NMOL and a test level of 20 in NMOL, or for those in American terms, a test level of 800 or a test level of 900 will feel exactly the same.
Yeah.
So you won't know you're declining until it gets to that point where it pops over the edge where you suddenly become symptomatic. And it might be that you are fine, you know, you feel the same between levels of 450 and 900, but when you go to 410, suddenly you feel like shit.
Mm, okay.
But at that point, it's too late because you've not noticed the decline.
Yeah.
So if you do the PCT process and that's the route you choose to go, test, because you will then see if you're starting to create a declining pattern. And then you know that each cycle you do is running the risk of permanently shutting you down. Mm. And you may make the decision at that point that, you know what, I don't want to go there, so I'm going to stop cycling. But at least you have the information to make that decision.
Let me ask you this, Dave. So let's say, you know, you do the post-cycle therapy, you take some time off, you get your tests done, and you say, okay, right, I'm back to base level, I'm producing again. How long, on average, would somebody want to wait before they got on their next cycle?
Well, if you do your test 4 week post-PCT and you're back to baseline, I would say, really, you leave it another 4 weeks, and then you can start a cycle.
Okay. Okay.
So I would say a little bit longer. But with, I've always looked at roughly 3 month on, 3 month off, 3 month on, 3 month off.
Okay.
Unless there's a problem, then extend it slightly. But the point is, I'm not saying you should PCT. I'm not saying you shouldn't.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that if you do, at least give yourself the choices and inform yourself of what's happening in your body so you can make the decision that you know that that next cycle could be riskier.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you go into that next cycle not knowing, and you might come out the other side having never be able to recover again. And if someone had told you before you did that cycle, this is going to be your last, and then you're going to be TRT, you might have made the choice, well, you know what, I'm not going to do it, then I'm going to stop now.
Mm, yeah, good point.
So it's just about the more information you have, the more informed your choice is, the better you can make a decision.
All right.
So ultimately, if you're looking from a health point of view, then a PCT process is the healthiest, but it's got to be done correctly, and you've got to have that time off post PCT before starting your next cycle. If you're not going to take that time off, then a cruise is a better option. But if you're cruising, you're supposed to be mimicking natural levels, not cruising on three times natural level.
Mm, yeah.
And the bottom line is this: the stronger something is, the faster it works, the more damage or harm it's going to pose. So the higher you run the bloods, the higher you run your cruise doses, the shorter the time periods are going to be before you start to create a problem. If your bloods are run at correct levels, then you've got a lot longer time scale before you can potentially get to a problem. You see, naturally, our hormones aren't static. They peak in the morning, they go up and down during the day, and don't stay at a set level. When you take TRT, your hormones are pinned at a higher level consistently. And the big change is that your heart wall starts to slowly thicken. And the other thing with that heart wall is it starts to lose elasticity. Long term, what that creates is a weaker heartbeat because it can't move over the range, so it can't create the same powerful pump that it used to. And as a result, you run the potential of going into heart failure at some point. Now, bear in mind that heart failure is a condition, it's not an immediate thing. And heart failure basically means that the heart is incapable of pumping at the strength it needs to pump. So therefore, blood flow around the body is not flowing at the correct rate, and oxygenation of the body is reduced, among other things.
All right. I'm going to move on to the next one. We've got a shoulder injury question. He asks, what can be done for shoulder issues, whether it be supplements, stretches, exercises, etc.? For the past month, my right shoulder always hurts with any press movements. It will feel fine, but when I start to bench press, the pain starts to come back, so I skip the exercise. It's like a nagging pain that just won't go away. It does not hurt 24/7. Normal day-to-day activities, no issues except when stretching my arm out or to put a shirt or jacket on. If I do lateral movements, lateral raise movements with no weight, he can feel a little bit. He says, I feel a little tightness right before my arm gets to parallel to the floor.
I would suggest that the first thing would be to visit a physio and have a look and see if there's actually damage in there and what that damage actually is. A stretching program, because if it is tight and it is pulling, then that needs stretching, that tension needs to be released. And judge, depending on what comes back from the physio, you may need to go for a scan, you may not, depending on what they feel the injury is, but hopefully a physio should be able to provide you with some sort of rehab program. And the other thing is to look at the exercises that are causing you the problems. You may have an issue with the technique you're using in those exercises. So it's not uncommon that when people bench that they will push the shoulders or extend the shoulders upwards, which will then create load into the shoulders and take it away from the pec. So in order to maximize load on the pec, you need to keep your chest lifted throughout the movement and your shoulders pulled back. A wider grip would also take tension away from the shoulders and put more load onto the pec. Elbow relationship should be out flared if you want to focus on pec. If you're going to tuck your elbows down in powerlifting stance, then you're going to get more load on the front delt. So, you know, it may be a couple of things, but I would start with a physio, let them have a look, see if they can find out what's wrong. And if they can pinpoint where it is, that should then direct where you need to go from that point forward.
I just got so it used to be that the main course of action to see if you had like torn soft tissue was get an MRI. I guess that there's a new technique for ultrasound that's supposed to be pretty good. Here in the States, if you want to get an MRI, the first thing you have to do is get x-rays, and then you work your way up. There's a whole series of things that need to be done before they will approve an MRI. But I didn't need any kind of prior authorizations to do this this ultrasound. I haven't gotten to see my results yet, but I went in and I had it done specifically for my shoulder. And they said that it's pretty good at this point, that they'll be able to tell pretty close to the quality of an MRI, and the cost was much less. Like before insurance, I want to say it was $200 versus thousands.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the thing is, this is why I like a physio for, as the first point of call, because quite often a good physio will be able to get you pretty close to what the damage is anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, you know what other good point you make, there's so much going on in the shoulder. It's
such a junction of attachments, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty generic to just say I have shoulder problems. It would be good to know, you know, first of all, isolate, well, what exactly is the problem, right?
Yeah, and I mean, a good quality physio could probably, you know, maybe be able to, certain injuries are quite commonplace, and it'll be, this is what you've done, this is what's going on, you're tight here, release the tension here, increase the tension there, and get some balance. You know, sometimes it's that the chest is over tight and it's pulling the shoulders in, it's tightening the delts, so it would mean doing a little bit more back work to pull the structure out wider and stretch everything back. So there can be all sorts of things going on. I've always found a good physio is a very good starting point. A decent physio is going to turn around and go, you need to seek further medical advice on this. It is more than what I'm capable of dealing with. And unfortunately, with physios, it's just a case of going by reputation, really.
Okay. Now, I know this wouldn't be your initial course of action, but what do you think of the healing peptide BPC-157?
Very good.
Yeah?
Very good. Very, very good.
How have you used it?
I've used it on a couple of niggles and tendonitis type pains, and it's always been quite effective. I've seen a lot of clients use it again, and some have had real effective results on it. I've also used it with clients that have Crohn's disease.
Really? I've heard this now.
Yeah, it's a gut peptide, so it's very good at reducing inflammation in the stomach. So it's a good peptide. It does need some dosing, but it is a good peptide.
What have you seen as far as dosing goes? What's been effective?
5 to 10 milligrams, usually near the 10 milligrams a week for a couple of weeks in the loading phase, and then 5 milligrams a week therefore onwards.
Okay, fair enough. And it used to be believed that you had to inject this at the site of the injury, but since then I've heard that once you take it, if you were to say use it IM, it's just going to travel systemically to whatever inflammations you have. Is that right?
The original thoughts were that TB500 was systemic and BPC-157 was localized.
Okay.
I, be honest with you, I've never really looked at it again since to see whether the idea that it is systemic is supported or not. I've always generally used it in the localized area anyway.
Okay.
So I can't honestly say yes or no on that one at this stage because I don't know, but if I will try and remember to look for next week.
Okay. Okay. And it sounds like it would work systemically. I mean, if guys are using it for Crohn's, you know, if you take it and then it, you know, it's working, you know, in the gut and the intestines and stuff, then, you know, you obviously weren't site injecting that, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the way we've done it is we've put it into the stomach area, but obviously it's gone into the muscle tissue in front of the stomach.
Sure.
It's difficult to, yeah, you're right. I mean, but I think the theory was that it tends to remain in the gut, in the body.
Okay.
So why isn't it traveling to other areas if it's, you know, so I don't know. I need to have a proper look at it. Instead of rather saying something now that's incorrect, I'd rather have a proper look at it.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'll see what I can find too. I'll be interested to hear what you have to say. It's an evolving thing, right?
Very much so with peptides. I mean, they are research drugs, so obviously research is still being done on them.
Yeah. We got a Dear Davey here. This is from Punisher. He says, in my past few relationships, this isn't just his current one, this is his past few relationships, he says, my health and fitness lifestyle has been a source of tension in the relationship. Example, I like to eat on a meal plan to achieve certain goals. She would like to cook unhealthy meals on a regular basis and be offended if I don't eat them. She'd like to go out and eat multiple times per week where there weren't always healthy options available. I would go to the gym 4 times per week, fortitude training for the win, he says. She wouldn't understand why I couldn't skip a day or a week of training. And for that matter, on a regular basis. When I am close to achieving a goal, she would want to spontaneously go on a several day long trip, which left me no time to prep meals, etc. This is an amalgamation of experiences from multiple relationships I've had. I am starting to feel that it is not a matter of us having different hobbies, but rather living different lifestyles. Is it possible over long term to be in a relationship with someone who has no interest in health and wellness and whose interests often conflict with living a bodybuilding lifestyle? It's not that like I prefer chocolate and she prefers vanilla. This is something that pervades life daily. I know compromise is the name of the game in relationships, but constantly making compromises can lead to both people being unhappy. What are your thoughts and experiences when it comes to bodybuilders dating someone with no interest in health and fitness? Any strategies you have used in your own lives to make it work? Thanks. And once again, this is Punisher. Drop me a private message or a DM, and I will get you out a t-shirt for Advices Radio. Thanks for your question. Dave, what's going on here, man?
Is it possible? Yes. I mean, what he describes from his point of view, and I don't mean any disrespect for this, but I'm going to add the question or the little phrase of if he is being honest, is he seems to not be overly demanding in what he's asking for when it comes to his commitment to his lifestyle. He states he only trains 4 days a week, so that's not overly intrusive. And he seems like he is willing to compromise and be an element of flexibility in his dieting and his schedules in that way, because he does comment about doing some of the stuff that's been requested of him. It is about compromise. There's no denying that. And if the compromise is too great for either party, then the relationship isn't working and the relationship should end. It's quite that simple. People seem to have a thing where they seem to struggle with and a relationship ending. If it's not working and it's making you miserable, then there's no point being there and it should be ended. There's nothing wrong with that.
It's tough. It's tough to come to that. You know what I mean?
It is. And I understand that. But at the same time, if my shoes hurt, I don't wear them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't buy a different pair of shoes. And I know that sounds very blasé, but it actually, when you take out all the emotional bullshit, that's what it boils down to. If a relationship isn't working, there is no benefit to staying in it unless, and this is a big unless, it's not working periodically because of a certain factor. That could be a family illness. It could be a certain situation with work. It could be financial pressure. That's slightly different. But, you know, just the basic fundamentals of what you two enjoy and you can't find compromise and you resent compromise, then that relationship is not for you. Now, from what he's described, it very much sounds like the individuals are quite insecure and they're threatened by his lifestyle and they're threatened by his structure. And they almost seem like they're deliberately trying to sabotage it.
Yeah, now, it does.
There's an old saying of misery loves company. And the essence of that is that if someone around you is succeeding, what it generally does is it causes us to reflect on our own lives as being failures. Because they're succeeding and we're not. Why aren't we succeeding? They're succeeding. Why aren't we as successful as them? Why aren't we as happy as they are? So quite often, our reaction to this isn't to go, fucking hey, well done, mate. I'm going to, you know what? You've inspired me. I'm going to get off my ass. I'm going to do it too. It's, no, come here. Come join me in this cesspit of shit and can't be arsedness, because then I don't look bad if you're as shitty as me. How many people offer you a piece of cake because they want to eat it?
Oh, absolutely.
And it's just part of human nature is that, you know, certain people will celebrate successes and try and emulate them. Other people will try and drag you down so they don't have to reflect on their own lack of progress. And this is very common with diet situations. I've seen it time and time again when one partner eats quite healthy and structured, the other partner, he either doesn't want to or doesn't know how to, but they perceive guilt and shame because one of them is making the effort, they then start to feel guilty about their own lack of effort. So they'll try and bring their partner down to their level instead of trying to rise up to the partner's level. And ultimately, these sort of relationships are destructive and therefore are never going to be a great success story. It's not that they can't exist. They can exist for a very long time. But they will always be counterproductive because you've always got this element within the relationship that's trying to destroy the other part of the relationship.
Mm.
I think keys are when you get into a relationship, we all tend to present our best self. So when you go on your first date, you don't sit there in front of the girl that you're trying to impress in your worst clothes with your ass hanging out, scratching your balls and then sniffing your finger, picking your nose, farting and burping. Because that's not really going to give a good impression.
Right, right.
6 months into the relationship at 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning after being out on the piss the night before, that might very well be the scenario. And the problem is, you know, if we sell ourselves with too much flashy marketing, we create a product that we can't live up to.
Mm.
So I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that you don't make an effort, but what I am saying is don't oversell yourself. Don't create a person that you not really are, because then you will continually fail to live up to that person and that will continually cause friction in a relationship. So if you're going into a relationship, be clear. I train 4 days a week and I genuinely do not like to miss that. However, you know, it's a birthday, a special occasion. I've got no problem. I'll move my schedule around. That isn't an issue. But I'm not missing my training because you want to take the dog to the groomers.
Yeah.
You know, so I am willing to compromise on important events and certain things, but the rest of the time, that is what I want to do. That's what makes me happy. And if that isn't something you can live with, then this relationship isn't for me and you. And the same with diets. But at the same time, as someone who's involved in the fitness lifestyle, you've also got to bear in mind that the person you're with isn't. And so you need to have a little bit of time when you indulge in their lives. This can be structured. So you might say, you know what, Sunday afternoons or Sundays, I'm never going to train on a Sunday unless I'm going right up to a comp prep. And I always make sure I spend that time with you and the kids or whatever it is. Great. Doesn't mean you have to eat shit. And it's unreasonable for anyone to force you to eat shit because there is no real productiveness of that. You can spend time socially with your partner or your families and you don't have to eat shit. You can go out for a meal and still eat healthy. You can have steak, you can have vegetables, jacket potato, whatever it is. It might not quite be the amount in your diet, but it'll be close enough. You don't have to be that fucking anal unless you're 6 weeks out. You know, so that there are compromises and there are workarounds constantly. But if your partner falls out with you because you go out for a meal and you choose steak and vegetables and you don't eat a pudding, then I'd question the motivation of your partner. Why the hell are they falling out with you? Because basically they're falling out with you because you're doing something, you're not doing something that you don't enjoy.
Yeah, yeah.
What partner wants to force their partner into doing something that they don't enjoy for the sake of it? Because it has no impact on your partner's meal or your partner's enjoyment if you don't eat cheesecake.
Yeah. If you prefer something else, then so be it. I want you to be happy and enjoy what you want to enjoy, you know, right?
Eat your cheesecake, enjoy it, love. But the issue becomes because they then feel insecure, so they then feel judged, even though you're not saying anything, because they're eating shitty food and you're not.
I've seen this happen in situations where there's a couple that have been together long term and then one of them decides that they want to get into fitness and then they start making healthy changes in their life and the other person starts feeling insecure about it.
Yeah. And that is it. It's a lot to do with the other person feeling insecure. And you're not judging them and you're not sat there judging them or anything like that, but they perceive that because they feel that, well, I suppose they're reminded of where they're failing.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I could see that. So in this case, it sounds like this isn't his situation. It's not as if he you know, got a wild hair and just decided, hey, I'm going to get into this. He went into these relationships, with these people already knowing, or whether he was honest with them about how much work he was going to put into to his training and stuff when he started the relationship, we don't know. But it does look like it's a pattern. That's one thing for sure, right?
Which would then point to the fact that he's probably got just shit fucking taste in women.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, I mean, I'm sarcastic. But, right, you know, right. If there is a pattern of relationships failing or problematic issues with the relationship, then it is worthwhile sitting down and taking a look at yourself and just saying, well, hang on a minute, is this me?
Yeah.
Because I'm the common denominator here. Is it that I'm not being honest with them at the start of the relationship? Is it that I'm actually more obsessive about my training than I realize? And it's not that's, you don't have to, the thing is, everybody tries to attach blame or right or wrong to things, and you don't have to. You know, if you sit down and you've had a string of four or five relationships that have gone tits up because they've all said, oh, you're too obsessed with training, then there's worthwhile conversation to sit down with yourself and go, well, am I? And you know, do I put too much priority on my training? And then just run some scenarios past yourself. You know, well, all right, I can't train tomorrow because I'm going to have to go meet somebody for this and see, you know, oh, no, I'm not doing that. I'm definitely going to be training. And maybe you are obsessed. Yeah. Well, then you need to find someone who's obsessed with you, and so you can indulge in it together. It doesn't mean that what you're doing is wrong. It just means that you're choosing the wrong type of person for you. And then some people just, I have a friend who's, they've just got married, actually, been in a relationship a long time, and I don't think 2 weeks go by where she doesn't throw him out or throw a pizza or a knife or a kettle at his head. But it that works for them.
Okay.
Personally, it's not my lifestyle, but one of the people in a relationship is an extremely explosive and volatile individual. She's lovely when she's good. She's terrible when she's bad. And he has his faults as well, and they clash constantly, but it works for them. Those breakups and steam let-offs are just their way of coping with life and everything around them. And once it's done, it's fine, and it doesn't leave a lasting impression on either of them. Where if it was me, that would leave a lasting impression on me. So if I have an argument with my missus, then you know, that stays with me for quite a while.
Yeah.
But we don't argue very often, so it's not an issue in our relationship. They argue every 2 weeks. You can almost set your clock by it. But at the end of the day, the next day, it's all forgotten about and they're not bothered. So it's horses for courses. Some people just work in different ways. Some people enjoy different sets of environments.
Yeah.
You know, so some people like their partners to be yes people. Some people prefer to be dominated like that. Some people like to be controlled and dominated. They don't like free will. Some people like an edginess in the relationship. They like to feel a little bit insecure. It's something that appeals to them. Others prefer security and cuddles and warmth. And so it's just about finding the right person for you. But if you've got a string of, if you're going for the same person all the time, it's not working out, then maybe you're going for the wrong person.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that was some good stuff. We got enough time here for one more question. It's something we kind of touched on earlier when we were talking about your kidneys. This is Puddinhead. He says, hi, blokes. Really enjoy the show and love Dave's no bullshit answers. Could you guys please go and do an in-depth session on kidney health? I personally think that this is one of the most important and misunderstood things in bodybuilding. I know Dave has issues with his kidneys and would love to know how they found his issues and what he does to help the problem. I get so many mixed messages from my doctors. I have high creatinine readings, but my urine protein tests are perfect. They said it's fine because I'm a bodybuilder. He's 115 kilograms, 12% body fat on DEXA. But I always worry. EGFR is just an estimation that uses your creatinine reading. So how can it be accurate if you have a lot of muscle or are breaking down a lot of muscle on a cut. Cheers, fellas. Love from the D Train in Australia.
EGFR isn't accurate if you've got high muscle mass or a high protein diet or you supplement with creatine. So it's not. The bottom line is EGFR isn't, but a GFR is.
Okay.
But that's not something that's worked off from blood. So it's a more complex test. With kidney function, the key areas to look at are obviously your EGFR, your creatine levels, your bun ratio, and also look at your protein content in your urine, which he has done. Because the most common problem with kidneys for bodybuilders is FSGS. Now, I'm going to get this wrong, but it's follicular segmental glomerulus something or other.
You did better than me.
Basically, what it is that the little glomeruli, which are the filters within the kidneys, are partially damaged in partial sections. And as a result, they leak protein into the urine, which will generally result in slightly lower levels of albumin in the blood. And in turn, that can then cause water retention. Because the albumin in the blood attaches to water in the blood, which is then picked up by glycogen and pulled into the muscle. If albumin is low, the water can't bind, and so the water seeps out, going towards fat tissue and the skin, thus causing edema and water retention. So kidney function tests are a bit of a nightmare because there isn't readily available anything that you can really do.
Mm.
So the main thing is just to keep an eye on those markers that he's mentioned. And now he's got a baseline with those, he can monitor them for change. So he can work off that. So he can monitor them for change. So if things go wayward and creatine starts to increase, or you start seeing changes in albumin or changes in urea, or changes in protein content in the urine, then you know you need to look further.
Okay. Yeah, this is one, it's kind of, I think, confusing to a lot of people. And you know, a lot of us are going to see elevated levels. Do you suggest doing anything different with your diet or your training before you get tested, like take days off of training or lower your protein intake, anything? Well,
this yes and no. I would say normally no, because you want to test in your normal environment. Now, potentially taking days off training isn't such a bad thing, because obviously that will lower the waste levels that are in the blood and you can get a more accurate kidney function reading. But what I wouldn't change is diet. Because you don't want to change what's going on. Because if, for argument's sake, all right, I'm going to go for a test in a week's time, so I'm going to drop my protein really low for the next week. Well, that's not giving you a correct reading at your common lifestyle. And if at your common lifestyle you are starting to struggle, it's not going to show because you've changed the parameters. So I would always say initially, training rest, yes, but I wouldn't alter diet intake or anything of that nature.
Okay.
And then that will give you a true reading, less the confusion from post-workout bloods, but that will give you a true reading of your kidney function in your normal sustained diet and lifestyle. And then off the back of that, if you start to see problems, you can then say, all right, well, I'm going to retest now. But you've got to bear in mind that if you get a better result on a lower protein diet, that doesn't necessarily mean it's just the protein that's causing a problem. It could mean that at higher levels of protein intake, your kidneys are starting to struggle a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, protein doesn't particularly damage kidneys, but once kidneys are damaged, protein becomes a much more important factor in their function.
Hmm.
So if you find adverse results, you don't really want to be creating a false environment to create good results so you feel good about yourself.
I see.
You want to then pursue and investigate that point. And at the end of the day, I've literally just had a client, he's gone through a full set of bloods, he's gone through an ECG, and he's going through an echo scan in 3 days' time. He's getting chest pains. Now, when he spoke to me about it, I was a bit dubious at first, and I was like, how's your bloods coming? So bloods are spot on. I said, your BMP, yeah, that's all fine. I went, right, okay. I said, have you got any tightness in your back? He went, yeah, I'm a little bit between my shoulder blades. I went, right, okay. Now, his missus is a bit of a masseur. I said, get your missus to do your deep tissue on your back tonight. And he was quite worried. He's thinking, oh, shit, I've got a heart issue going on. And she went into his back, hit the knot, and the chest pain came up. And was like, got it. You've got a knot in your back, especially on a nerve band that's going around into your cavity. But I've also said to him, you've got an echo in 3 days. He says, yeah, well, I'm not going now. I said, you bloody are going. Hmm. Like, what do you mean? I said, you're still going for that echo. You're still going to get your heart checked out because this is an opportunity to have an MOT. Fucking take it. Because, yeah, that knot might be the cause, and I'm pretty sure it is. But we'll still have a look at your heart just to make sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what you get a lot with bodybuilders is they'll change parameters so that the test results look right, or they disallow certain results so they feel better and sleep at night instead of investigating things and finding out for sure.
Hmm.
Because for all you know, it could just be ticking over in the background, just not doing so well.
Yeah.
The sooner you find it, the sooner you can change it.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's real practical too.
Hmm. So, yeah, you know, by all means, training will change blood results quite adversely. But normally if there's something wrong with something in your body, it will reflect in more than one blood result.
Hmm.
So if kidneys are struggling, you won't just see high creatine. You'll see alterations in other areas, urea, albumin, urine, proteinuria, whatever it may be. You know, if kidney values are high, you're potentially going to see high levels of CK. So if liver values are high and livers are stressed, you're probably going to see high levels of CK. If your ALT is low but your AST is high, then chances are it's training induced. So just give a few days rest, retest, and see what your blood levels are like then. Because AST is in heart and muscle tissue as well as liver, where ALT is predominantly only in liver. So there's stuff like this that you can just, you know, have a look at. But as I say, it's not so often you'll get one out of whack without other things being out of whack with it if there's a problem, which is why we have the barrage of tests that we do have.
You could also look into getting the SM test. Are you familiar with that one?
No.
It's the shit monkey test. I had to work it in there somewhere.
That was terrible.
I had nothing, Dave. I had nothing, man. I'll take it. You're right. It was terrible, but I had to squeeze it in somewhere, and there was nowhere to work that one in today.
You could have turned around and said, well, maybe one of that guy's girlfriends are all shit monkeys.
That's true. that would have been a lot better, wouldn't it have?
Yeah, that's more fitting, you see. Lateral thinking here. Come on, Scott. Keep up the program.
All right. Well, what's your plan for today? It sounds like you're getting everything caught up on work. You're settled back in. You're rubbing elbows with the BBC and everything. What's next on your agenda?
Today's clients, tomorrow is clients. I've also got to do 3 5-minute videos for a website called Iron Master UK.
Oh, really? What's that?
I've no idea.
Interesting.
They've asked me to do, they're doing these pick vids, which are little 5-minute picks of information.
Hmm.
So they've asked me to pick 3 subjects and do a very quick video on each of these subjects.
Nice.
And then they're going to host these videos for, I think it might even be their Instagram account. I'm not too sure. So I've got that to get done at some point. And then the rest is just client work. Only just started and I've got a lot to get through. So that's pretty much the rest of my evening. It's 5 o'clock now. I'm going to go get something to eat now, have a little toilet break. And then I'll get back down here and crack on with clients until at least I get half of these out of the way tonight and do the other half tomorrow.
Nice. Well, thank you for recording a day early with me here today.
Yeah, you're going to dentist, aren't you?
Oh man, I'm not looking forward to it. Like you, I'm not a fan. Don't like going to the dentist.
No, I don't like the dentist at all. It's not even a fear or the pay. I just hate them sticking their hands in my mouth.
Oh, tell me about it.
Ugh.
So it looks like this time tomorrow, the procedure will have been done, and I probably won't be podcasting for a couple days after that.
So So this is full Hollywood smile you're going for here, or what?
I'm just trying to be catch up, be normal. I want to take care of my health overall. So this will improve my quality of life, and I'm just gonna move forward from here and just keep getting my cleanings and everything, and do what I got to do.
He's really, ladies and gentlemen, having a full Hollywood smile fitted, Botox in his lips and his eyes.
Yes,
that's what's really going on.
You got me. You won't recognize me the next time you see me.
Well, we really record sound only. We never do video, so I can't. I don't know what's changed or not changed.
It's true. Well, I'm going to request we do video after this is done. All right, Dave. Well, I always appreciate your time, man. And we've gotten so much great feedback about the shows and stuff. People are really excited, and I'm glad that we could share your message, because it's an honest one, and I think it's a message that people should hear.
Thank you. I'm glad people enjoy it, and I really appreciate people with tuning in and listening. And I didn't really think people would be that interested, but it sounds to be going quite well.
It is. It's because you're humble. I'll stop trying to compliment you too much. We don't want you to get your ego too big as your physique.
I need a pee. The physique's not big anymore, mate.
All right, let's get out of here, man. What do you say?
No, okay.
All right, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally. We will see you next time.
Voices Radio Network.